What's going on, guys? Eric Black here. This is Rockcast. That's my partner over there. Partner. Hi, Parker Miner.
Hey.
What's going on, buddy?
Hey. How are you? How's it going?
It's been a while. It's been a whole 24 hours since we've actually talked. So it's good to get back to talking with you. It's nice to see you. Parker, we've got another guest on the show this week. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not.
Okay. Well,
we don't normally have guests.
We don't. We never have guests on the show. They're just people that randomly show up. I don't know what's going on anymore. Listen, here's the thing. This week on the show, this is actually the kickoff to season two. So thanks to all of you for listening to season one. Now you have to listen to season two. That's right. We got picked up again. I don't know why. Somebody decided it was a good idea. Don't know why. This week on the show, here's the thing. This guy is he's been in the game for a minute. I actually grew up listening to the music that this dude puts out, and that sounded awkward and weird.
So we know it's a dude.
I like it. Yeah, it's a little weird. But Phil from All That Remains, sir, how are you today, tonight, this evening, right now?
I'm doing well. It is warm in my studio, and it's cold outside, so I'm happy about it being warm here.
It's you sound like you have that. The voice just sounds very warm and inviting.
I am very fortunate to have the voice that I do. It's given me a career. So
yes, agreed. 100%. I had to buy mine at Walmart. It was on clearance, so it's not as great, but it does the job.
I got mine at Goodwill.
the thing about Walmart is it may not be top quality, but most of the stuff gets the job done.
That's right.
And that's why there's Walmarts everywhere. If it wasn't for the fact that they're selling stuff that people need and can use, there wouldn't be Walmarts everywhere.
That's right. My wife married me. She's like, yeah, you'll do. That's fine.
you know.
Oh, man. But how you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm doing well. What is going on is I'm hanging out with you guys.
Hi.
I've been spending time at home building a home studio. COVID has kind of given me partially a kick in the butt and partially an excuse to spend time building a home studio, I guess, which, you know, in this day and age, you know, it's 2020 and I've been in the business of making music for over 20 years now.
Is it still 2020?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. I know it seemed like forever. It's almost March again. Remember, it was last March when I started.
We
are 4 months away from the beginning of March, and the beginning of March is when I started thinking we're probably not going to do that tour that we're supposed to do in April.
Buckle up.
So
you got this studio. You know, it's got you going, man. It looks good. Yeah. I like that mic you got there. That's really nice.
Thank you.
It's sexy. Yeah.
You know, professional quality equipment, I think, is important. If you're going to put a professional product together, you have to have professional quality equipment.
So that's right.
That's true. You know, that's the truest statement I've heard this week.
You know, it doesn't have to be the most expensive out there because, I mean, an SM7 is, you know, it's more than an SM58, but it's not, you know, not the really high-end expensive mic. So,
right.
But it's good quality and it'll do you right.
It's good for us.
I believe that to be true. Yeah, absolutely. That is
Phil actually called me and he said, hey man, should I get the SM7B? And I was like, absolutely.
Get that one.
Just go ahead.
Yeah.
I appreciate the advice too.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We just give advice. That's all we do all day long. Usually it's crap, but we don't tell anybody that until it's all over. Here's the thing. You just said this. You've been in the game for quite some time, right? You've been doing this for 20 freaking years.
With All That Remains, 22, actually. Well, 21, actually.
Yeah. Wow. That's ridiculous. Speaking of that, I want to start this off by going back to the original band. That is Perpetual Doom. You started
back in the 90s.
Do you remember way back in the 90s? Yeah, the mid-90s-ish.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how this band became and how it kind of shaped who you are.
It was the first band that I saw in a club, right? So I'd gone and seen concerts that were like, I think I'd seen, what was it? I'd seen Metallica by then. I'd seen Iron Maiden. So, you know, I'd seen arena bands.
Right.
The first time I ever went to a club, like a, you know, a bar, I was, you know, 16 years old. And, you know, these were kids that I went to high school with. And to see kids that I would see in the halls on stage playing music. And I'd only been playing guitar for maybe a couple of years, like two or three years, 2 years maybe. And I was blown away.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I can't believe how cool that is, that like kids that I'm in school with are doing this. And one of the kids was younger than me, like in a year younger. And I'm like, this is just, I can't even believe it. So that was my first kind of introduction to a scene, you know, like you hear about the local scene or the hardcore scene or the, you know, the death metal scene or whatever. That was my first introduction to a scene. The first time that I saw bands that were composed of my peers in high school. And I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So then awesome. I was like, yo, let me try out for your band. I tried out and I wasn't good enough. And so they said, we're going to go with someone else. And then that kid was kind of a jerk and they called me back. They're like, why don't you come on back? And I was like, all right. And so then I got the job.
That's actually how I got this job. Parker was like, fine, let's just go ahead with you.
Just go, fine.
He was the best we had. So I just took it, whatever.
Walmart.
Smart, smart move.
Yeah. Walmart.
So how long did that last? That was until, I mean, it was obviously the mid 90s. So how long were you in that?
Yeah. I joined the band probably in 92.
Okay.
Right. And then I was in the band for about a year and then I joined the Marine Corps. And so I went to boot camp and did boot camp and my school. Started doing my school of infantry. I was going to be a mortarman.
Ooh, nice.
Got a medical discharge from the school of infantry. Got sent home. So I came back. It was about a year I was gone. Mm-hmm. And so in 94, Perpetual Doom started doing stuff. We recorded our demo in 95. 96 or so, they decided they wanted to move away from death metal into more of the new metal thing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't having it.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, I'm all set. And I kind of checked out then, and then a band called Shadows Fall was looking for a singer, and I went and tried out for them and sang for them for a couple of years, and then started doing stuff for a new band because I wanted to play guitar.
Right.
When I was in Perpetual Doom, I started in Perpetual Doom because I play guitar, and I was just looking to play guitar in a band again, and then the guys in Shadows Fall were like, hey, we want to find another guy, or we got this other guy we want to get. And so I was like, well, I guess I'll just start focusing on these pile of riffs that I have for another band. And that was all that remains.
Nice. Nice, man. That so you,
cool.
You were playing guitar in mm-hmm. Perpetual Doom. And then you did that in Shadows Fall, correct? Or you didn't?
No, in Shadows Fall, that was the first time I was just a front man, doing the singing thing. So I went up there and I you know, I was doing some, you know, a lot of screaming and some singing. And then I started writing riffs for another band because with a guitar player. So the guitar players in Shadows Fall were this guy by the name of John Donay, who now plays in Anthrax, and this kid, Matt Bashan. And those guys are great guitar players. Right. So they didn't need me to write riffs, but I still would kind of like I still liked playing and I still wanted to write riffs. So I kind of brought my stuff and I was like, what do you guys think of this? And they were kind of like, we got the riffs kind of taken care of. And I was like, all right, well, okay. So I still wanted to play guitar, you know? So I was just like, all right, well, I'll just do this and do this on the side or whatever. And just so happened that they were like, hey, this other guy's available and we want to get him. So I was like, well, I got this suitcase full of riffs and might as well put them together and make them into something.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
I think it worked.
Yeah. You know,
a little.
It's worked a little. this has been my job for the better part of the past 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your service.
Yeah,
for the time that you were in.
Cheers. Thanks. Yes. For the 45 minutes that I was in the Marine Corps.
Well, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. At least I got an honorable discharge. I didn't get kicked out.
Right.
Putz.
Right.
Anything, you know,
Eric would have had a total dishonorable discharge.
Yeah. I already have one and I didn't even join. They're like, nope. No.
Just in case,
go away. You cannot come back. And I did. I just went and had some tacos. It was fine.
They were like, go get comfortable. Come back when you're ready.
That's right. And I did.
Good.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is fun. I like this. Good show. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. It's a good show. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to end right now. That's weird. That's a weird ending. We're not going to end.
Phil, you played Rock in the Range, obviously.
We did. We've done it multiple times. We did the first time that we ever did it, I walked out on stage and it had been pouring and we're all talking amongst ourselves and we're like, all right, everybody be real careful. It's slippery out there. And I walk out, and the first thing that I did was proceed to slip and fall on my ass. And I didn't even run. Like, we knew that it was a mess. We knew that it was going to be slick as hell. And I'm like, all right, cool. Normally it's like, you know, go running out on stage and, yeah, you know,
Wait, did everybody see it?
It was at Rock on the Range.
I mean, I did.
80,000 people.
Yes. Yep. I in the middle, walked right out in the center of the stage.
Okay.
Like right where, you know how the singer usually stands in the center?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's where I was. Right. And well, like I said, I walked out thinking that I was like, all right, it's going to be a thing. If I try running, I'm going to kill myself. Walked out, went to put my foot up, and somehow, I to this day have no idea how it happened.
Wow.
But at least 10,000 people saw
it. There was a 10% chance it could have happened backstage or side stage, you know, before you came in. Of course,
No. This is this. If it happened side stage, I might have
just done like the first song, just laying down, just like as part of the show. Yeah. Like, this is how we do our, this is how we start. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Normal.
Yeah. It was our first appearance at Rock on the Range, and people were like, who's this new band that I've never heard about? And oh,
he's on the floor. Cool. All right. That's fine. So you were more concerned about the wet stage than you were about like electricity or anything like that, getting shocked with all your equipment on there.
Usually I am. And partially that's because I'm not actually connected to anything, right? Like I got a wireless, and I've got my wireless ears, and I got my wireless mic. And so just so long as I'm not standing in a puddle that has a cable running through
it, right,
I'm pretty good. If you have your guitar, right, if you're playing guitar, excuse me, and you go up to some microphone, specifically the SM58, which we talked about earlier, mm-hmm, it's got a metal grill.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're touching guitar strings and then put your face on the actual mic, you can get it. You can get anything from a mild buzz to a life-changing event.
Oh, man. Can you imagine like slipping on there? That's the first thing. You get up and you try to sing with that SM58 and you get shocked.
And then just,
you fall back
get
down.
Shocked,
and you're like, it's all part of the show. We're very
you actually slide into the mic. Right. It's like the cat on Christmas Vacation. That cat had 9 lives. It just used them all, man.
Oh my God. You're just like, at what point does the guy come out and set me personally on fire?
That's right. You know? That's right. That's ridiculous. Oh. Well, we were huge fans, still are. I mean, rip, but still are huge fans of Rock on the Range. We've got some pretty good stories as well. It was just a fun time. So we always try to bring that up because it was one of our favorite festivals to go to and just to be around and cover and all that stuff. So
I like the Columbus area anyways. I was married to a woman that came from Columbus, so we had a lot of her family and a lot of nice. I got along with a lot of them. We had good times out there.
Well, it was a funny story. I mean, it was real quick. We the last year it happened. We went, Eric and I went, and we came out of the media tent over there, you know, and then we came out and there was this guy, and he was in a robe.
He was. That's it.
What did they tell him?
They told him to I don't know what happened before, but our conversation with him, we're like, why are you in a robe? And he's like, well, they told me to go back to where I was and get comfortable, or come back when you're comfortable or something like that. So he took it literally. Yeah. And he went back to his hotel room, threw on a robe, maybe took a shower or something. His hair was wet. And then he came back to the festival, and that's just what he was wearing.
It was comfortable.
And he was legit comfortable. So,
did he have clothing underneath the robe?
You know, we didn't take a peek, Phil.
Good.
But I'm assuming he had something. There was no shirt, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
And I didn't go any further than that because there was no OnlyFans back then, so I didn't care. There's just Rock on the Range in general.
Oh man,
fun time.
Good times.
Yeah,
loaded
good times.
With goodness. So let's see. All That Remains, we're going to jump back to this band. You're familiar with this band.
Yes,
I've heard. They formed in what, 98, I think is what it was.
98.
Yes.
Yeah, 98. Well, that was when the other band asked me to leave because they got the other guy. So like it was like November, they're like, hey, we're gonna get this other guy, right? And so like it took me a couple months to put half a band together. So we did our first demo in 99, right? Mm-hmm. I had like 3 songs, and it was me playing guitar and Chris Bartlett on guitar, Dan Egan on bass, and Mike Bartlett on drums. And so we were just a 4-piece. Ollie hadn't even joined the band yet. So we did our first demo, and that was in 99. So technically it was 98 is when we got started.
Right.
It was the Willennium album.
What?
John, do you remember that? Will Smith? Will Smith came out with the Will-linium.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a bit, I like Will Smith. I do
like him.
Not at all.
I think he's pretty wholesome. I mean, he probably should get rid of Jada.
Yeah. By this point
already,
please.
You know, it is what it is. Well, let me just say this. So, All That Remains, you've done what, nine studio albums. You've done a live CD and DVD, and here's the most amazing part. You have sold over 1 million records worldwide.
Yeah, we sold over 1 million records about, I think it was in 2011 is when we actually had hit over 1 million. Right. So we might be closer to two right now.
Wow.
But then again, I don't know because it's in 2012, like that was the death of the selling records.
Yeah.
So we might not. It might be like, you know, that's it. So
1 million's platinum though, right?
1 million is platinum. If 1 million of one record, we have a single 2 weeks, which I got the plaque back there.
That's our
individual gold record. We have a number one single at rock radio. We've got a bunch of top fives, a bunch of top tens. You know, I mean, I'm not in any hurry to stop making records and stop making music, but I mean, we've had a really killer run.
Yeah,
especially considering the fact that we started out. You know, we started out as such a heavy underground band. The idea of us having gold records or having number one songs, having, you know, chart topping songs was never, you know, it wasn't in the cards until probably 2009.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we'd already had a song that made it on the radio that people responded well to before we thought that it was possible for us to have a song on the radio that people respond well to.
Yeah,
like we definitely had to be proven. There wasn't like, we can do this, man. I can taste it. It was just like, if people dig it, great, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to get our hopes up because, you know, we were a metal band that was never supposed to be played
mainstream
on the radio and get media radio stuff. We had double bass and screams and blast beats and so all that kind of stuff was never in the scope of possible.
Well, and talking about that too, like how, because of that, how did you figure you were going to make it? Because I mean, everybody you talk to is like, we got to get on the radio. That's how you make it. But how did you, back then, that was the way to do it. You had to get on the radio to be huge and blah, 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 you know? So how did you guys decide, set radio aside, how did you guys decide, well, this is how we're going to do it. This is what's going to happen and we'll see what we can do.
I don't know that we ever thought we were going to make it.
Fair enough.
Like I kind of figured that I was always going to have some kind of job.
Right.
I remember going to see a lot of bands in the 90s. And again, at clubs and stuff and underground bands, going to see Deicide and Grave and Entombed and Carcass. And, well, I didn't see Carcass back then, but, you know, at the gates and all these bands from Europe. And if you hang out and talk to them and stuff, and they're like, yeah, well, you know, we get government funding because we're exporting Swedish culture by playing music, or you know, we go home and we have to work this job and that job, and that's the way it used to be, but it's not really like that anymore. But that's the way that it was in the 90s. So for us, it was never a thought of I'm going to do this for a living. It was just, I like playing music, I play in a band, and hopefully if we do this tour we can get another tour. And it was that far. That's how far. Hopefully we get another tour and then we can get, you know, maybe we can get second of four on the next tour that we do, you know? And if we do that, then maybe someday we can, you know, we'll be a direct support band, you know? And it was always incremental and small steps. And then it was like, we put out The Fall of Ideals and it's like, oh, we're going to get a song on a video game. We're, you know, minds blown. Like, what do you mean a song on a video? Like, it's a video game that goes in an Xbox and gets sold in Walmart. And, you know, like totally, like all that stuff was so outside of the realm of possibility when we were starting. So it wasn't like we were like, oh, we're going to make it. It was like, did we just make it? Like, 2 years ago and not notice, because that's what it felt like, you know?
Right.
It was like, I haven't had a job in 4 years. Yeah. What the hell? Hold on, you know? Couldn't believe it.
Take that, Kid Rock. They went platinum,
that's right.
too.
That's right. Well, that first time that you, I mean, you just kind of talked about it, but that first time you noticed, hey, this is a career, this is what we're going to be doing. What did that look like for you guys?
I mean, the first time that, I got a paycheck was probably in 2000.
Wow.
Right. Like the first time we got a real, yeah. like a real paycheck.
Yeah.
Where like I could do something with the money more than just be like, all right, well, throw some money at this bill and then throw some money at that bill, but I don't have enough money to pay off any of the bills. I can just throw some money at this, yeah. you know, that kind of stuff for a good 4 or 5 years from when I stopped working in 2000, stopped working completely to go on tour full time in 2004. So we did a tour in 2002 was our first tour. And then we came back and there people got like our drummer broke his arm and just basically screwed up the whole cycle. Like the whole cycle was done. So we had to basically start over, had to get and replace people anyways. So when we put out This Dark and Heart in 2004, it was March, and we had that when we went on the road for that one, that was us really kind of committing, saying no more working. We got this tour, then we have another tour, then we have another tour. No, you're not getting paid for any of these tours.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 3 months of touring coming up. You will not be receiving any income. All the money that you make is going to go into the gas tank and go into keeping the tour, you know? And so we did that from 2004 until like 2008, basically 2007 for, you know, with no serious income. The income would be like, we'd get some money in and someone in the band would have a need. Yeah. We'd fill the need. Right. No one else would get paid. You know, we'd get some money in and someone else in the band would have a need. They would get their need filled. Right. No one else got paid. And so we didn't really get paid and start making money until 2008.
Man,
you know, that's when I got a decent sized check and I bought a car and
stuff. That's still cool though. Oh, yeah. That you know you could actually make enough money to when somebody did need it, worked out to where you know it would pay somebody's need for that. So I would say that's yep. a pretty big win on that side of things.
Yeah,
you know, that's a lot of bands just don't even get that opportunity. So pretty amazing. There's a lot of stuff. I'm sure that there are a stupid amount of stories that you have in your brain right now, but one of the best memories, let's say from a fan perspective, like you've interacted with a fan. What are your best memories from that scenario?
Anytime someone comes up to me and tells me about how a song like really affected them personally, I do a lot of writing about relationships and stuff like that I've been in or whatever, because I heard Dave Mustaine say this one time and it really struck me. He's like, if you write about events, your songs are going to be dated. If you write about people and feelings, your songs are going to be timeless. And that's true. You know, it doesn't matter if the song was written 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. If it's a love song or about a relationship, people kind of get it, you know, because that's one thing that's universal to have. You know, ups and downs in relationships with other people. So having songs or a catalog that has a lot of stuff that's personal and about relating to other people, I think is something that people gravitate to. And I'm fortunate that people come to me and they say, hey, you know, this song helped me with this or this song helped me with that. I try to avoid writing songs about, events. Iron Maiden could do that. They can get away with that really, really well and write a song that's really cool and write a song about, you know, an event or whatever. I don't feel like I can really.
It's 21 hours.
Oh, sorry about that, guys.
I was like, did I push a button?
No, that was my computer.
Another woman telling me what to do. Sweet.
She doesn't tell me what to do. She just tells me when it is so I know what I should be doing.
That's good.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess wait, I lost where I was.
We
going.
All did. That's Sorry Joe. That. That's how we did. Pretty much how the show goes.
Yeah.
What I talk about again? I don't even know. So. Well, and I think music is one of those things that I don't think I know. It to me it transcends time. I mean, I can listen to an album when I was, you know, 10 or 12, and I can listen to it now and get something totally different. Get something totally, just you know, totally different. So I think. you're right. I think writing about feelings, I think writing about, you know, things like that is something to where your music will be timeless. Your music will be, again, yeah. It could hit me something. It could hit me in a different way 20 years later and does because of events that I've been through as an mm-hmm. older adult or whatever you want to call it. Speaking of touring, we kind of are talking all over the board here, but I just remembered that you did, I think it was back in 2010, you filled in for Killswitch Engage as a vocalist.
I did. They called me up and they said, can you get on an airplane? And I said, here's the deal.
Yeah.
I got an injured dog here with me, and the dog is going to have to get to D.C., and I'm in Massachusetts at the time. So I'm like, if you can get the dog to D.C., get me to the airport and get the dog to D.C., I can fly down and fill in. And they're like, we're going to do this.
I bet they have never had that request ever in the history of anything that they've ever done. If my dog to D.C., I'll come. I'll be
there. Yeah. Yeah, because my dog had an injury and my dog was with me. And I had to get the dog to my girlfriend's house who was in D.C. because I couldn't leave the dog with my mom, you know? So I was just like, all right, I got to get the dog down. If you can get the dog to D.C., I'll get on the plane. Yeah. Like, all right,
that's we'll do crazy.
This. Done.
Now, and the dog's okay. Was okay. Nice.
Was okay.
All right. So the difference between the crowd that you were normally used to and the kill switching crowd, was there a huge difference or was it just like,
very similar crowd. You know, we have a lot of the same listeners. You know, for the most part, the Killswitch fans were very, very, very receptive. One or two people were not pleased.
Always.
But they put up a sign at all the shows. Hey, Howard's not here. If you want a refund, blah, blah, blah. You know, Phil from All That Remains is filling in. And I don't think there was like, you know, a handful of people that didn't. Right. Come to the show, you know.
They did.
Like, well, they missed out.
So. They did.
Well, you know, they definitely missed out on the opportunity to get a Phil Switch Engage.
See what he did there? Oh,
They made Phil Switch Engage shirts, and if you go on eBay, I think they're going for like actual price, and it is years and years later. So that's something that's really for a T-shirt to hold its value is a pretty good deal.
So
that's awesome. How
I don't know what they're actually going for. I'm just kidding around.
How is Adam that crazy? Like, he seems like he's a pretty crazy guy.
I mean, I've known Adam. I've known Adam for 25 years. So kind of, you know, I knew Adam when Adam was in Aftershock. I filled in on guitar for Aftershock when All That Remains and Killswitch Engage were getting started. So I was actually trying to get Joel to come to join All That Remains, and Joel was trying to get me to go join Killswitch Engage. They wanted me to go play guitar because at the time Adam was playing drums. I played guitar in Aftershock, filling in a little bit. And then I was like, I was like, Joel, come on. If you're not doing nothing, you should come check out my band. He's like, nah, I'm doing something with these guys, but you should come check out my band, you know? So I've known those guys forever and ever. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human beings. Adam is kind of like that, you know, but again, it's like, that's the way he's always been. So it's not, to me, it doesn't seem weird. I know that there are people out there that are just like, oh man, it seems like he's such a loud and crazy, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah. But when you're around someone for long enough and that's how they act, you're just kind of like, well, yeah, you're right. But that's all you see of him. You don't see him when he's, you know, just hanging out and when we're all being normal and stuff, you know.
But still, I mean, that to me, that's awesome. I love watching Adam play. I love watching all of them play. But he's all over the board. He has fun on stage. Yeah. You can tell that he has fun on stage. Yeah. And, you know, when he does, you know, I've seen some of the behind the scenes footage and all that stuff. And he's anytime that he is in that setting. He is having a good time, and you know that he's having a good time, and it's awesome to see because he loves what he does.
Fun is good.
That's right. Good. Good. And all the fans love it too.
Yeah.
So that was in 2010. Let's fast forward to 2016. Yeah. This happened in 2016. You filled in for Ivan.
Yes.
In Five Finger Death Punch.
And that was another midnight phone call. Hey, Phil, can you get on an airplane in the morning?
Did you need a dog situation at that point?
No, I didn't need someone to watch the dogs at that point. I just called. I said Zoltan hit me up. At the time, we had the same management, and my manager and Zoltan had been hitting me up, and I had fallen asleep early. So I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was like, I don't know. Maybe I woke up to go to the bathroom or whatever. But I picked up my phone, and I saw that Zoltan had called and Chris, who's our manager. I'm like,
yeah.
All right, I'm thinking, literally the first thing I thought is, what did Ivan do? I'm like, why? The only reason that Zoltan and our mutual manager would call me on the same night is because they want me to go sing, right? And so I'm just like, all right, what happened? And so I hit call Zoltan. He's like, yo, if hypothetically, could you do this? And my reply was, send me a set list. Because I don't know your songs enough. So send me the set list of what you're playing. And he sent me the set list. And 2 days later, I was on stage with
Holy crap.
2 days?
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking because I didn't really... Like, I knew Killswitch's stuff much better than I knew Five Finger.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
You killed it, though, man. You did awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. The first night was really, really nerve-wracking. The second night was pretty nerve-wracking. But I liked the... By the third night, I was like, yeah. And then for the rest of the other five shows, I was just like, let's do this. It was great. It was a good time.
So. There was one point where I did hear, I forget what song it was, but there was one I really couldn't tell the difference between Ivan and you. And I was like, that's really good. I mean, that's incredible.
I can do a pretty good Ivan imitation.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can. It's pretty awesome. Man, that's so... I don't know if I can ask this question, but what was your favorite out of those? Which one was your favorite
of the Five Finger shows, or of Killswitch
and Five Finger? Yeah, which
your favorite? I don't know. I'm friends with both, good friends with both the bands. Like, I've known the guys, obviously the guys in Killswitch since before we were. Any of the bands even left the, left our hometown, and the guys in Five Finger Death Punch, we played in 2004, All That Remains opened up for Motigrator, which was Ivan's band before Five Finger.
Yeah.
That was in 2004. So that's when I met Ivan, and that's when we became buddies and we hit it off and have been, friends ever since. And in 2007 was Five Finger's first show, I think, and their first show was opening up for Dragon Force, and we were on that tour. It was like Dragon. It was, I forget who was. Five Finger played, then someone else played, then we played, then Dragon Force played. So I mean, and so I've known these guys for so long. So I don't know that I have a favorite. There were cool things about each tour, the Killswitch tour was longer, so that was cool. The Five Finger shows were in arenas, which was cool. There's a bunch of cool things about both of them. So I don't know.
Two different experiences.
Yeah. I don't know that I could say which one was my favorite. But
well, and that brings up another question too. We try to ask this as often as we can, just because it's something that we're curious about. But you do festivals and you do venues. Do you prefer one over the other, or are they their own unique experiences?
They both have pros and cons. Right. If we do festivals on a tour where we have a bus, then I probably prefer festivals to club shows. But if we don't have a bus, if we're flying to festivals, then I prefer club shows. I mean, I know it's weird to get that specific, but having that bus, that rolling home is a big deal. And then when you're playing festivals, everything is temporary. So when you get your dressing room, the dressing room might be cool. It might not be cool. It might be a trailer. There might be a shower. There might not be. There's a lot of variables. Maybe you might not be able to shower after the show. You have to go back to the hotel to shower or whatever. If you have the bus, you have a routine. You know what to expect with the bus. And so that makes it a lot easier. So.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that I totally understand I think it would be weird to just fly into a festival. I think that would be really weird to not.
Well, we do.
I know sometimes. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I think that would be very weird to have that.
It can be. But the what makes the show is not the crowd size. What my preference is all logistical stuff. It's all about how easy is it to live, because to me, I don't care if I'm playing for 500 people or 20,000 people. Like, if there are people that are pumped to see the show, killer, I'm on. I'm all about it. Let's do this. That's what I care about. I don't care if it's an outdoor with the breeze or if it's too sweaty or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I prefer to be a little on the warm side when I'm playing. If it's not freezing, I'm happy, whether it be on a big outdoor stage or a small club stage. To me, the show itself doesn't matter. It's like, how far is it to go from the stage to the bus? Maybe how far is the dressing room away? You know, do I have a shower? Those kind of things. Maybe the daily life stuff.
A dry stage would be great.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, specifically a stage that I don't fall on my.
That's right. It's butt always on. A plus. Yes. Yep. So have you actually done that since, or is that the only time you've ever had that?
Oh, I mean, I've fallen on stage more times than I can count. There was one time we don't normally do six, which is there's one song called Six we have, and there's a big long screen in the beginning. We don't normally do a song like that in the beginning. So that big long screen, normally it doesn't give me an issue to do it. I can hold it out for a long time. It's not a problem. Going right into the beginning of the set doing that, I didn't realize it, but it can make me lightheaded. And we start the song and then just the whole world goes like this.
Yeah.
And then I start falling over and I don't remember this because I was out on my feet and Mike, our guitar player was like, what the F is wrong with him? And he started getting mad at me because I'm like kind of staggering around. And then I finally stood, then I was like, then it came to, I was like, I'm on stage.
Right.
I'm supposed to be singing right now. That's six. I know this part. Whoa, I'm supposed to be. And then it's like lights back on and it's like, oh, I'm lost. You know,
did anybody notice that?
Oh, I'm pretty sure everybody in the place noticed it. Everybody who knows how the song Six goes noticed it.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Wow.
So yeah, I've there's been some stage mishaps, falling down, taking headstocks to the head, you know, those kind of things happen.
Imagine that.
Eric does that too. It's just usually before the show.
It's for fun. It's nice. Well, all right. So I have a game, but I'm going to ask one more question here before we get to the game. Sure. It's a simple game. It's fun. You'll enjoy it. So when you're doing a music video, you know, you probably have a single out. You want to do the music video for the single, but how do you choose what a music video? Like, how do you choose this song gets a music video? Is it by how well the song is doing, or do you already decide, okay, well, this is a pair. This song goes a single. We do a music video.
Usually we know. And honestly, the thing that really is the biggest deciding factor is the chorus. For us, it's like if the chorus is hooky and if people dig it, if we think that it's going to stick in people's heads, that's the one that'll be the single. So there's a song called Hold On off of a record called For We Are Many. We put out in 2010. Mm-hmm. That song initially had the verses were not sung. They were screamed. And we were really, I was really, really, really proud of the performance, the screaming, because it was brutal and it really, really just really, really great, right? Like just delivered really, really well.
Yeah.
Band loved it. Sent it off to the label. And as soon as they heard it, my phone rings and I'm like, I know what this is.
Right.
And it's the guy from the label, this guy named Jeremy Kramer, great guy. And he's like, so about the single. And I'm like, what do you think the single is? He's like, so and I'm like, so we got to redo the, and I knew, you know, that just that melody, it's like, okay, so that's the melody. So now we have to redo the verses. I have to come up with melodies for the verses. He's like, I was like, but the vocals are so badass right now. He's like, dude, but listen to that chorus, that hook, man. Da, da, da. And I'm like, yeah. And then, you know, Hold On was like, it was top 10.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep.
What am I going to say? No.
Yep.
Man, I dig I think it was the last one you came out with. This probably won't end well. Is that right?
Yeah.
Everything's wrong. I love that, man.
I was really pumped about that one. Everything's Wrong is a really cool tune.
Yeah, that was sick.
Chicks dig it.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah, I guess.
So it really is. If the chorus is there, you know, obviously if it's a song that's kind of on the, yeah, on the kind of a ballady song, like What If I Was Nothing or For You or Just Tell Me, yeah, Something or something, those will tend to be singles. But
I know Octane played the hell out of that one, man.
Yeah. They I love Octane. They really give us a lot of support.
They do. Yes. They are amazing. So, I kind of lied. I have one more question. Sure. Because we have to play this game because it's awesome. It's fun. But I gotta ask this. No. So doing vocals with Danny from Asking Alexandra, mm-hmm, how did that come about?
I sent him a text message.
Can you do this with me?
Yeah. I said, hey, I got a song. Take a listen to it. Here's the song. What do you think? I would love you to do the chorus, the second verse in the chorus. He's like, cool, man, I love it. I was like, sick.
Wow.
I mean, it was nice. that easy.
Wow.
You know, he's a great dude. Again, you know, a friend. I can shoot him messages, be like, hey dude, how you doing? You know, it's not weird when I talk to him, I'm like, hey, how's your wife? You know, how's the dog? We have a bunch of mutual friends that, you know, outside of the music industry as well. You know, it's like some of the guys from Black Rifle Coffee Company. I don't know if you know those.
Yeah.
But we're buddies with those guys. So, you know, it's not weird to be like, yo, Danny, what do you think? And he was just like, yeah, dude, I love it. I'll do it. And I was like, sick. And it was even easy to get him. Like, we were just like, dude, can you fly out to do the video? And he's like, yep. So it's just, when you're dealing with people that you're cool with, it's super easy. Yeah. You just be like, yo, dude, let's do this. Yep. You know,
that is true. That's very true. Speaking of doing cool things. Now keep in mind, Bill, that you said, yeah, I'm going to go on the show. I'm going to do this. It's going to be, keep in mind.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited.
You made that decision.
I'm feeling good.
This game is called Would You Rather. It's very simple. And it won't get too weird. We'll see.
Maybe.
If it doesn't get too weird, Parker will take over and make it weird.
That's right.
So I got three questions for you.
Okay.
And answer in the best way possible. So we're looking for clicks on this one. That's what we're trying to do here. anyway. All right. So the first question is, would you rather be a house pet to an alien race or get probed every day for 60 days?
What do you mean by probe?
I think you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I haven't heard these questions either.
A house pet for an alien race.
Yep. It's like a dog to us.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many variables. Like is the probe sharp? Is it large? Do they take care of you if you're the pet? Do you have a dog house outside, or are you allowed to come inside? Do you sleep in the bed? There's a lot of what ifs here.
The only question that I'm asking you right now is, would you rather be a house pet to an alien race or get probed every day for 60 days? So maybe it's sharp. Maybe you have a dog house outside. Maybe you have one inside. I haven't met the family yet, so I'm not really sure, and I haven't seen the tools that they use to probe.
Do I get to meet the family?
You do get to meet.
Oh, absolutely.
You'll be inside of something. There'll be a window. You'll get a see, and you'll be like, "Oh, adopt me," and they'll be like, blah, 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 and they'll come over and adopt you.
Great.
They'll pet you on the head and all that good stuff.
So, I think the pet way would probably be the way to go, Phil.
I don't know.
I don't know about getting probed.
I don't either. But the probe thing is temporary. The pet thing is for the rest of your life.
That's true. That's a good point.
That's what I'm afraid of. Like the pet thing's for the rest of your life. And like, what if they have a kid that like sets you on fire?
That's never good.
That's true.
Not at all. Not even kind of.
What did you say?
But it could be a baseball bat that you get probed with. So who knows?
Yeah. Right.
That'd be awkward. That'd be for 60 days straight.
A car.
Could be a car. We don't know. Questions.
I don't know. I mean, well, if you get probed with a car, you don't have to worry about 60 days. You know, there's probably only one.
Yeah.
You know, that's might, one time. And you don't have to worry about anything after
that.
Would
that be considered a one-hit wonder? Is that how we're
doing it? I think so. I do think so. Yeah.
All right.
One hit, and I wonder why I selected the probe as opposed to the pet. I guess we'll go with the pet.
Okay. You'll be a pet forever. That's fine. All right.
It's not fine. He'll wake up in the middle of the night and be like, damn, I should have done the other one.
Probe. All right. So next question. Would you rather go to a party with Mick Jagger or Keith Richards?
Yep. Keith Richards, probably.
Really?
Okay. I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Because I feel like if you're around Keith Richards, you're not going to die.
That's fair. Yeah. That's ridiculously fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he might be magic. Yeah,
he might be. He might outlive all of us, actually.
Yes.
All right. So Keith Richards on that one. All right. Here's the question. This is the question of all would you rather questions. And I've asked this to one other person and got a really weird answer. So, you're ready?
Yeah, I'm. Oh, yeah.
All right. Would you rather, Phil, lick the floor of a poorly cleaned gas station bathroom or be flogged with a cat of nine tails 10 times?
Who's doing the flogging? Oh, you.
I'm doing it.
Ooh.
That's right.
How much do you weigh?
All of it.
That look. The bathroom, obviously.
All right. Fair enough.
Penicillin exists.
Yeah, so. That's right. True.
Yeah, you might actually live through that one. Yeah. All right, so you're gonna lick the floor.
How much do you weigh all of it?
I weigh all of it.
And the look.
Do that look again. That was
it was great.
Oh my goodness. Well, all right. That's I like that one. Poorly cleaned gas station bathroom. Now, I'm sure, Phil, that you have been in so many poorly cleaned gas station bathrooms. So you kind of understand that scenario.
I'm familiar.
So yeah, that took
what a
go ahead.
What about the bathroom from Dumb and Dumber though?
Ooh.
Well,
do you remember that bathroom?
That's kind of a poorly cleaned
gas station. Pretty nasty.
It was horrible. I don't even think it was a bathroom anymore. I think it was a swamp or something. I don't It was not great. It was not great at all.
Poorly cleaned implies that it's cleaned to some level or to some extent.
It does.
Maybe like once a month.
But again, Phil, you have been in poorly cleaned gas station bathrooms.
I have.
So
I have.
We're going to go with that though, right? We're still. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We're still going.
Right.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to it, but that's fine. Whatever. It's totally cool.
I'm going to call Phil at Phil's going to get another call at midnight. I'm going to be like, are you sure about that first one?
It'll be the weirdest midnight call he's ever had.
That, yeah.
Oh,
I doubt that.
Man. Let's, now in 2011, I thought this was pretty interesting. You remember 2011? Vaguely. Yeah, me too.
Vaguely.
You were on CNN.
Oh yes, yeah. because
earthquake in Japan. That's not how you pronounce it. I'm unfamiliar.
Japan.
Unfamiliar. So what? I mean, you were on tour there, but what brought on CNN? Like, how did you accomplish that?
I think that it was just someone at our label was like, "Hey, we have a band in Japan that was playing and just met, you know, reached out to someone at CNN and they were like, hey, you know, we'd like to talk to you. And I was like, all right, cool. So, I mean, it was a very, very weird couple days, obviously.
Oh yeah.
How bad was it where you were?
So we were in Tokyo, which was like I think it's like 500 miles south of Sendai, which is where the epicenter was. Or the epicenter was off the coast of Sendai. So we were 500 miles away and it was a 5.5 where we were. So that's still a serious earthquake.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a 9.0, like it was one of the biggest earthquakes in recorded history. It was like the second biggest. Yeah. I can literally say, yeah, I happen to have felt the earthquake in the second biggest earthquake in recorded history.
That's something
particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was backstage. The band was on stage getting ready for sound check. I was backstage with our, actually I was alone in one of the offices on my computer, started feeling the earthquake. My tour manager popped his head in real quick. And this was what was going through my mind. I was like, it's okay. This is the Ring of Fire. They have earthquakes here. Right. They build buildings with the expectation of earthquakes, we should be okay just so long as none of the locals look like they're freaking out. And as soon as that went through my head, one of the Japanese crew sticks his head in the room, eyes like this big, just like, yo! And I was like, you know, waving for us. And so I was like, okay, well, now it's time to get nervous. And so yeah. Hauled ass
out. What floor were you on?
Probably like the 7th or 8th floor. Oh, it wasn't on the ground. We spent some time walking down the stairs to get out because it was a busy building. Tokyo is not a small town, you know, so.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Crazy.
It's a little bit bigger than Nashville.
Yeah. A slight bit bigger than Nashville.
Well, technically, that's what made him fall on the stage. The earthquake. Right?
It was just a pre-shock. Because
yeah.
It was definitely in 2009 when I fell on the rock.
Okay.
Definitely 2009.
Oh, aftershock. Oh, what that was.
Some people will get that.
Anyway, rock and roll. Well, there's one more thing that I'd like to talk about, and it's a little weird, but I also understand it. I totally get it because we're all the same. You are actually a pretty big fan of a lot of different styles of music. And there's a few. There's like Sarah McLachlan, Garth Brooks, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, and the list goes on and on and on. My question is, does this help you in your writing styles to kind of, you know, to kind of get a grasp of everything that's going on? Does that help you understand what you're writing?
I definitely look to multiple different styles of music for inspiration. So like I mentioned a song called Hold On, right? The title of that song is kind of a bit of a wave to Sarah McLachlan, because Sarah McLachlan has a song called Hold On. Yeah. You know, there's vocal lines that we've used that were inspired by hip hop songs and rap artists. And we've done stuff where there's rhymes inside rhymes because of rap and hip hop artists. And one of the things that I try to do is make sure that my first line of a song is extremely descriptive, so that way you understand what the song's about right by reading the first line. And I got that from Taylor Swift, because I feel like as soon as the first line of her, you know, whatever song she's singing is done, it's like, I know what this song's about and I'm already signed up for the ride, you know?
It's like
exactly. So I do look to a bunch of different types of music for inspiration. So yeah,
that's pretty awesome. And you know, we talk about rock, metal, and things like that, but we respect all music. Sure. Because there's somebody out there, you know, there's a billion people that listen to rock, there's a billion people that listen to metal, but there's also the same amount of people that listen to all the other genres. Mm-hmm. You have country, you have pop, hip hop, rap, all that good stuff. And there is plenty of good things that come from those. Now, doesn't mean we listen to it, but that means that we respect the crap out of it, because it's still music. Yep. It still moves somebody. It still makes somebody have that thought process that we talked about earlier. Yeah. You know, to where a lot of that stuff still transcends time and makes you think about different things. So
yeah,
it's all good. Every part of it is much needed.
One of the things that I feel like I tell people a lot is that genre is secondary to song, right? So if you have a good song and you do it as a country song, it's gonna sound good in 6 months when an R&B singer takes that same song and just does it in an R&B style. That's why cover songs work. That's why, like, we did a cover of The Thunder Rolls by Garth Brooks, and it works.
That was awesome.
Because it's a good song. You know,
it did work. I want to be honest with you, man. At first I was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. And then I pushed play and I was like, okay, all right, we can make this work. That's good. I dig that. So you did a really good job on that. I was very impressed with that. You know, I grew up on country music. And then I found what we call the amazing rock music, metal music, things like that. Gave up country and went over here to rock metal. Again, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff. But you simply did a fantastic job on that. I wasn't really sure how that was gonna.
Well, that's
really pan out.
Thank you. That's because it's a great song. You know that.
Yeah, I mean, it seriously is.
All the time. People that are or great songwriters can write a song, and just because they write it thinking of this type of style doesn't mean that someone else can't hear the song and be like, oh, I could do this with it and do it in my genre, but it'll still be the same song. Right.
Well, and that's the thing too, you know, being that it started off as a country song, I think a lot of people think that you can't rewrite a song unless it's in that same genre for some reason. It's like, well, no, you got to do it in your own style. It takes a minute to figure out how to do that. But, you know, you see that a lot where people will take even a hip hop song and make it into a metal song, or a metal song and make it into a hip hop song, or whatever it is. So the thing to remember is just have fun with it. Just make it your own and just enjoy it. Make it so that it doesn't suck. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And, it's a good start.
You know, don't diss the person that actually wrote it. That's not a good thing either. But I think there's a lot of, if I'm choosing a cover, I get kind of nervous about if that artist ever hears it, because I'm like, what are they going to think about this? You know, how are they going to feel about me doing this? Am I going to suck at it? And then I'm like, I'm not going to think about any of that. I'm just going to do it. And then I'll apologize later.
Yeah, it's always better to just do it and ask for forgiveness. It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
I agree. Phil, where can we find you guys online?
If you are looking for All That Remains, you can find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/All That Remains. Instagram, same thing, instagram.com/All That Remains. If you want to follow All That Remains on Twitter, it is at ATRHQ. If you are looking for me, I am Phil That Remains everywhere. Parler, Minds, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. Basically if there's a social media, site out there that I have an account, I'm Phil That Remains on it. So just go wherever you have social media and search for Phil That Remains. And that's me.
And by the way, you're twitching, you're doing a lot of, well, that sounded weird, but you're doing a lot on Twitch, and it's amazing. You're very busy on Twitch. You've got a lot going on.
I am grateful to the people that keep coming back to my stream for that. But yeah, you know, I sing All That Remains songs. I play some guitar. I play a little piano sometimes. I'm very bad at piano. I'm learning how to play piano. So
me too.
You're learning, or you're just bad at it?
No, I suck.
Yeah. It's hard. Doing the whole like moving one hand, it's tough. But yeah, you know, and hanging out, playing video games. I play Call of Duty. I play Destiny. I play, you know, we've done some Among Us and stuff. So come check out the stream. It's Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 8 p.m. Twitch.tv/Phil That Remains.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good times. All right, guys, we'll go check him out. Thank you, Phil, for coming on the show. We do appreciate that. It's been fun. And if you want to know more, obviously, he just said all of the pertinence for his stuff. Go check it out. Pertinence. That's the second time I've said that on the show. I try to bring big words in the show so that people can learn stuff like that. I looked it up before the show. It's fine. Rockcastshow.com is where you can find us. If you are listening audio wise, you can find us anywhere that podcasts are. That's true. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. If you want to watch the show, again, go to rockcastshow.com or find us on YouTube. It's all good. I don't know why I said that, but it sounded like a good time to do it. It's fine. Not a big deal at all. Parker.
Yes.
Thanks for hanging out, buddy. Yeah, I appreciate that. It'd be weird if you weren't here.
It really would be.
Yeah, because then I'd be talking to somebody else, and Phil would be like,
Phil, he even entertains me at this point.
I've enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Awesome. We appreciate that. All right, guys, rockcastshow.com. And you know what? We'll see you again next time. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Just hold on. We'll be back later. Just calm down. It's okay. Stroke your hair and it'll be good. See you guys next time.